Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall Credit Card Bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
Today, we are going to have a conversation with Colectivo ILE, which is an organization and a group of women on the island of Puerto Rico that has been doing anti-racist work for more than 25 years. If you go on their website, the first thing that stands out to me, it says in bold letters, Africa en mi piel, Africa en mi sed, which directly translates to Africa in my skin, Africa in my being. When I spoke to Mayra as well as Kimberly, who are two women that you are going to hear from today that work at Colectivo ILE and are dedicated to this work, we talked about not only race in Puerto Rico and what that means in terms of history and colonialization of the United States, but we talked about what it means when we're talking about politically, when we're talking about socially, and how that shows up today and what it means for future generations. Here is Mayra from Colectivo ILE.
This is a labor of love, and it takes all of us to have that anti-racist future. It takes all of us, white, Black, young, kids, older people, it's all of us. So we are almost obsessed about talking about dreams because that's a way to manifest that anti-racist future.
This is season 2 of Labyrinth of the First Gen, where we will hear the stories and the wisdom of leaders of African descent to learn more about how they are creating paths and breaking barriers across Central America and the Caribbean.
I'm the administrative director. I live in Caguas, Puerto Rico, born and raised there. I have a daughter, Bianca, which is all my heart, and I'm very happy to be here with you.
Well, I'm Kimberly Figueroa. I'm the programmatic director. Also, I do some facilitation in the workshops in Colectivo ILE and everything that the Colectivo needs anyways. From San Juan, Puerto Rico, and I'm a Black woman and proud of it and happy to be here too.
This is an organization that I just learned about in Puerto Rico, and they're doing some fabulous work. My first question for the both of you today is, what is the mission of Colectivo?
Colectivo ILE is dedicated to anti-racist community organizing and Afro-descendant people, especially women in Puerto Rico and abroad. Our main focus is to address the root cause of anti-Black racist oppression and to create systemic, institutional, and cultural changes in Puerto Rico and abroad. We develop and support grassroots organizations and grassroots leadership in communities and in organizations that, as ourselves, work against anti-Black racism in Puerto Rico and abroad. And we believe very much so in promoting community organizing as an anti-racist tool. For us, it's very important. That's why we are core of our organization is these trainings, these processes, these educational processes and conversation spaces about racism, how it manifests and how the systemic racism impacts Black folks in very precise and material ways.
Mayra gave a background about Colectivo ILE and how it started in Puerto Rico. And one of the most important things that she highlighted is that this group is founded and led by women of African descent, and why this is important.
Colectivo ILE was founded in 1992, and it's led by Black and Afro-descendant women. And that's very important to notice, because we Afro-descendant women are impacted by the oppression and the violence that racism uproots. To have an organization that thrives and is intentional in implementing the colonial ways of doing the work and led by women is very cool to see. And we're very proud of the work we do outside Colectivo ILE and inside with us as part of the anti-racist movement and as testament of what racism does to the life of Black women and Black communities.
I love what you said. And there were some things that came up that were interesting to me because a lot of people, I just had this conversation with a Garifuna woman who owns a restaurant. We talked a lot about being Afro-descendant and what does that mean in the context of Latin America, because mm-hmm. a lot of people don't even know that exists and a lot of people don't acknowledge that history. So when we're thinking about the mission of Colectivo ILE, can you also talk about maybe what are some things that have come up in terms of education around Blackness in Puerto Rico and even outside of Puerto Rico in Latin America?
In Puerto Rico, there's like a particular context because we all hear it when we go to school in very early grades. We've been taught that we are a mix of white Spaniards, natives, and also the African people brought here. But the thing is that sometimes that kind of mix is just like a cultural thing in terms of when we want to maybe talk about dance or food, for example, that kind of folklore, that's the word that I'm looking for. And that's when the Afro-descendant part comes alive. But for the other things, as intellectual matters or matters of being people with intelligence and agency and the will to do whatever they want, that is not thought in terms of being proud of the Afro part in Puerto Rico.
Kimberly did emphasize the importance of talking about colonialism because it is part of the reality in Puerto Rico. We're talking about historically past, but we're also talking about the present and future generations and the relationship of Puerto Rico as being part of the United States.
I think in Puerto Rico, we should add the colonialism, you know, because we are a territory from the United States and that adds like a layer of the way we think or the way we think it's the best way to do things or to conduct our lives in the way we do our lives here in Puerto Rico. And I would like to say that first, I mean, put that context over there, because I think that's something or that's a layer that many of other countries in Latin America do not have. And that's not make us special. I'm just saying that that's another layer of oppression and oppression in our minds too.
We talked about what does it mean to embrace the Black identity in Puerto Rico, and it can also be complicated because it is normal for people to feel like often associate Blackness with being on the bottom. And this can also really affect the way that they relate to or identify with recognizing or acknowledging Black roots.
In Puerto Rico, to be Afro-descendant for most of us, or maybe for the communities that have been part of the poverty or depression, I think that's a bittersweet flavor because we are proud of what we are, but also we know that we are down in the pyramid, you know? So for some people, I mean, I like that part of my culture or my heritage, but also I don't like to be on the bottom. You understand what I mean? And it's kind of bittersweet because I know that for some people, I look good, for example. I mean, my curly hair, the color of my skin, this and that. But when it comes to maybe intellectual things or college things and to be a respectable woman, for some people, I'm not that because of how I look. And you told something about education. The thing is that if we receive in our schools in the early stages of education that we are part of that mix, but we are not proud of that part, that's something that when we grew up as an adult, we don't see love for that. We don't feel love to be in the bottom. We don't feel love to be Black. That's something that you need to build here in Puerto Rico. For some of us, that's not something that we're taught even in our houses, because at the age of four, we're kids that our mothers were being doing relaxers in our hairs, for example.
Kimberly talked about how doing the work of acknowledging Blackness in Puerto Rico meant that you really had to do your own self-work to think through and figure out what does that mean to you and to have a sense of self-love.
So in our very early stages of life, we learn how to not love ourselves. So that's why I'm saying that build a relationship with yourself as an Afro-descendant here in Puerto Rico. It's a building matter. You need to do it like every day, because you can find love anywhere, not even in the media, not even in the work, not even in the education. That's something that you need to work hard on it, because even when you are 30 or 40, you still feel insecure. And that's something that we need to understand, because that comes really deep in our psychological matters, because people doesn't think that we like to be sexualized like anybody. Anyone likes that. And not only because I'm Black, but also because I'm Latina. You know, so that's layers and layers. And nobody wants that. But people think that that's cool. And I think that's difficult. But I will also say, like, in a more positive path, that I think we're doing the work. And I've been doing some work in schools lately and our other partners. And they're saying that the kids and the schools are really, really different than when we are. You know, they're proud of their hair, most of them. They're proud of how they look. And that's something that I would crave to have when I was that age. So I think that we are doing something really beautiful with our work too. But I mean, I will say also that in the later years, I think after maybe Maria's hurricane, there's like a new awakening of people understanding that we are not the same as the people living in the United States.
Hurricane Maria in 2017 had a catastrophic effect on Puerto Rico. It was a Category 5 storm that was the strongest hurricane to hit Puerto Rico in more than 80 years. It destroyed homes, roads, bridges, and also knocked out the power source of the entire island and triggered heavy flooding. Residents of Puerto Rico had to deal with issues like food shortages, water shortages, generators running out of fuel. Hospitals and schools were closed due to extensive damage. This is a very short description of how this affected the lives of people in Puerto Rico. Kimberly also mentioned that Hurricane Maria was a wake-up call for the people of Puerto Rico when they realized that the United States did very little to help the people on the island when they needed it the most.
Because we are not seen the same. I mean, we can have maybe a passport, but we are not treated as first citizens. You know what I mean? And that's something that a lot of people in Puerto Rico understood just after the hurricane, because we were left alone to die, to starve and everything. And that's something that a lot of people maybe in Latin America doesn't understand, because we as Puerto Rican, we love to help another islands or another countries when in need, but we were supposed to receive help from the United States, but we didn't receive that. And I think that's one of the most difference we have. And I think that's part of our Afro-descendant part, because they don't feel that we are like them.
You touched on something that I think is really important part of this conversation, which is the relationship to Puerto Rico and the United States. And I remember Hurricane Maria because all we saw on TV was Donald Trump went to Puerto Rico and was like throwing paper towels. And I remember watching that and be like, you know, like, no, he didn't. Like, go, and he brought paper towels to these people, right? So I want to talk a little bit about you said that people realized in that moment that they were not considered even human in that situation. So can you talk a little bit about what sort of maybe even movements or work that led to for Colectivo ILE after that happened?
I think it was a turning point for Puerto Rico in many levels, including the anti-racist. And it was a turning point because, as Kimberly was saying, the Puerto Ricans that thought of them as part of this great country called United States and that view themselves as white, even in Puerto Rico, the light-skinned people in Puerto Rico aren't treated like humans in the United States.
Maida mentioned that this moment in the aftermath of Hurricane Maria, this was a reckoning about identity, the relationship to the United States, but also how people in Puerto Rico were beginning to understand and even view themselves.
And from then on, I think that people painfully took note that we are not treated like humans. We're not treated like citizens. We're not treated as equals. And that is a turning point for all the struggles in Puerto Rico, especially the anti-racist movement.
We are going to take a quick break and we will continue when we return. This is The Labyrinth of the First Gen. This season on The Labyrinth of the First Gen, we want to continue the discussion with you. So after the show, please join us on our Facebook group called Labyrinth of First Gen, where we will continue the discussion of this episode. We want to hear more from our audience. We want to hear what are some things that you learned, what are some things that surprised you, or if you know any more about this topic, we will also love to hear your feedback. I will add the link to the Facebook discussion group in the description of the show. And we are back.
After Maria, we developed some idea pot. It's the colonial way of the think tank, no? And a community circle that can gather and talk about the problems of their communities and the solutions that need to be implemented in their communities. And we went to communities, Kimberly. How many calderos we had?
It was 18 to 19.
Almost 20 community meetings with majority women, Black women of communities. And we closed that initiative with a huge forum of women in Puerto Rico, kind of a congress, a community congress. I've been in Colectivo ILE for almost 6 years now. And for me, that was the most beautiful space that I've been ever. Because there were almost 100 women demanding action, demanding to be seen, demanding other realities, demanding other ways of living that were just and that were Afrocentric, not only for Black people, but also for everyone. And it was a space to imagine another world, another country, to establish collaborations between communities in Puerto Rico. One of the ways that colonization damages you is to think that you are alone. These women, right then and there, knew that there was a community of women and people that got their backs and shared their dreams.
Maida talked about some of the most significant takeaways and even the gravity of the experience of women coming together as a collective and talking about their dreams were at that time.
The biggest dream that all women had was to have a home. And not only in the aftermath of Maria that was so destructive and so many structures of homes were lost, but also the sense of community, not the house. They wanted the home. They wanted the community, the vecinality. And that for me was the most beautiful thing I have ever seen. And also made us think about Collective Huile as that home for all these women and all these dreams. And we took it very seriously. And after that, we have been working and following that path of the shared dreams. Because as Kimberly was saying, nobody wants to be in the bottom. Nobody wants to be in the bottom, and nobody deserves to be in the bottom. So after that gathering, we have been walking the walk and talking the talk to make these dreams a reality, not only for these women, but for us as Afro-descendant women. So we are now dreaming about a house, a space for Collective Huile, as well as those women wanting to be part of a community, to have a home. Also, the displacement of our communities is something very terrible. And the gentrification of Black communities is something very tangible and very hurtful and very terrible. And the concept of a home was a constant and is a constant. How can we build community to talk, to vent, to conspire, to plan, to work with? And I think that after Maria, the concept of home and justice became very apparent. And I think, I always want to think positive, that it changes. It changed the way we look at ourselves and gave us more, the fury gave us a light, you know, a fire to work for everyone's liberation. And it took a Category 5 hurricane to do that. I'm not romanticizing Maria, it was terrible, but it was a turning point, and our work has changed ever since. And there, as Kimberly said, there's this new generation of people that view things very differently, very differently. Young women, we have been working with youth for the past 2 years, and that's amazing. As Kimberly said, they embrace their Afro-descendants, but also doesn't have problems in raising their voices and demanding what we need and what we deserve. And that's, I think that's another ball game for us. And it's a good space to be, to keep doing this work.
Amongst the many things that Colectivo Huile does, including workshops in schools, education around Blackness in Puerto Rico, they also organize around political and social campaigns. And one of these campaigns that they organized around was identity and the U.S. census, the U.S.-based census. So we're going to talk more about that and how Colectivo Huile was involved in really shifting culture in Puerto Rico, advocating for people to recognize their African ancestry, and especially in doing that on the U.S.-based census.
The campaña de cara al censo, or facing the census, that was a campaign for the 2020 census. But that was not the first attempt that we made as a collective towards the imposition of the census. Back in the 2010 census, Collective Huile already made another campaign. Like, the census says that we are white, what your grandma says, something like that. And it was because back in the 2000s, the results of the census of that year was 80% of Puerto Ricans marked themselves as white without any other mix. And just 10% of the population marks themselves as Black. And that's not true. Not even when you go in the streets. Like, when you step out your house, that's not something that you see. Like, that's not real.
The results of the census in 2000 really helped to mobilize Colectivo Huile when it came to educating the Puerto Rican population and also having conversations around identity
and how that can be not only a social statement, but also a political one as well.
That was the first step to understand that we need to make a work towards the race, but also to understand what means the imposition of racial categories that was not asked to the Puerto Rican people. Because the census that was used in that time was the exact same census used in the United States. They just translated to Spanish.
The 2000 census was that it imposed many of the identities from the United States and didn't consider the cultural context of Puerto Rico and how identity and racial ethnicity are different in Puerto Rico.
So that means that also the racial categories over there was the same. And we are not even the same, not even in the weather. I always say that. We are not the same. And we as Puerto Ricans, we already have our racial categories that everybody here in Puerto Rico can understand. But what happens when we already have our cultural racial categories, but we need to put that in just three categories that were imposed? So Puerto Ricans doesn't know how to answer to that question. Also, a lot of Puerto Ricans that thinks that if you put Latino or Hispanic, it's the same to put your race, and it's not the same. There are two different questions and there are two different things. So those are, for me, and I think everybody, those are some obstacles in the way to obtain real results or real statistics.
Kimberly talked about the goals of Gado al Censo, or facing the census, and what was the mission of this campaign.
So we wanted to seek to raise awareness among us as citizens about the implications of the impositions. And also we wanted people to understand that if you mark Afro-descendant or if you mark Black, it's a political way to answer the census. Because as we've been saying, we are not treated as equals. That's like a political message that we send to the government, like, hey, we are not the same, and you know it, and you remind us all the time. So why are you wanting me to classify myself as the same as you? What are the benefits of that? Because we are not seeing them. And also, we wanted to people to understand what is the real meaning of answer the census, because that's another question a lot of people makes themselves, but they don't know. There's a lot of people that doesn't want to answer it because they have like a different immigrant status, for example. And that means that our statistics are not gonna be real. And that affects specifically public policy funds, to receive funds, also to receive aids.
She also talked about the significance of the census for the people of Puerto Rico and what it means to them socially, economically, and politically.
And I think the census has an importance here in Puerto Rico for us being territory, but also for people to understand that we can make our own ways to count ourselves, because we know how to do that. We know how to categorize ourselves. But we as people, as colonized, we need to understand that that imposition comes with a price. And the price is to make a widening process and also to maybe make people invisible. Because how can you address poverty? How can you address patterns of poverty if you don't have the real information?
Sereme Colectivo Ile, thank you for being on the show. And this is part one of this episode. Check out part two that is going to drop next Tuesday. For more information about Colectivo Ile and the work that they do, you can refer to their website at Colectivo Ile, and you spell this colectivoille.org. I will also put this information in the show notes.
Thank you for listening. Be in peace, folks, and have a great day.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.